So listen, I've just come fresh from a funeral and, you know, you shouldn't meet heroes. But there was a guy there who is a professional, an ex-professional for Wimbledon. He was part of the crazy gang. And then he was there when I was chaplain there back in the mid-90s. He left and played for Newcastle for a bit and Palace. Don't like to talk about that. But then he came back to Wimbledon. So that is fabulous. He was part of the Mighty Wombles. Yeah.
I didn't know they were called the Wombles.
Wimbledon fans are known as Wombles.
Well, I mean, it makes sense because of the books. But on the other hand, I can't help thinking, you know, your great rivals, Palace, I think they're the Eagles, aren't they?
Yeah, they have got a more mighty animal.
You've got the Gunners, you know.
Yeah, the Lions.
Lions. And you're the Wombles.
Yeah, but listen, if you come to our stadium and you start chucking litter around, let me tell you something, we are going to tidy it up.
Yeah, that's what a threat. Welcome, everybody, to episode 344 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page, and there is Womble Man himself, Joe Davis.
Come on, you dons.
Yes, you see, now that's Wimbledon as opposed to the other.
Don't even say it.
The MK Dons, I believe they're called.
Just bleep that out.
I had one of my most painful experiences with watching football with you at Wimbledon. Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. I remember it well.
You bought tickets for us to go and watch Wimbledon play Watford, who I used to, well, I still support in a way, but I used to go and watch more regularly in those days. And I had to stand in the home end, right behind the goal, while Wimbledon put 5 goals past us.
Sure did.
And because I was in the home end, I couldn't reveal myself as an away fan, because in those days, well, even now, I imagine that's not a very good thing to do.
Oh, yeah, I would have kicked your head in, yeah.
And so I had to applaud every goal that went in.
Oh, that was a great day.
It was on Match of the Day. Do you remember? It was on Match of the Day. And because we were right behind the goal, you could see us. And as every goal went in, you were up, and there was this very slow rise from me standing next to you and a sort of reluctant applause. Oh, it was so awful.
Good times.
Happy days. Anyway, do we have any church notices?
Well, just to say thank you for everyone who's booked in to the big church weekend away. And it's day visitors only now. So there's still space for people to, if you want a lovely holiday in the Lake District, why don't you book a week up there and just come along at the weekend, a couple of days, there's a daily rate. You can come along, be lovely to see you there. Or you can camp there. So those are options. Yeah, yeah.
The instructions should be on the website. Thank you to everyone who's already booked. If you've booked, by the way, and you haven't booked on the conference, but done the second part of it.
Yeah.
Sending your email to Stuart and Kathy, then please could you do that? That would be great. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, great. Anyway, how are you?
Yes, I'm all right. I've had quite a busy week. Lots on and lots of sort of appointments and meetings. And I've had that feeling, I don't know if you ever get it, where you just lie awake and you're sure you've forgotten something.
Oh, yeah.
It feels like every day I feel I've forgotten something. And everything's in, like, you know, endless to-do lists, and it's all carefully regimented, my diary and my time, and yeah, I still have this feeling that I've forgotten something. So I've been battling with that. I think it's because I'm going away on holiday at the end of the week, and that's sort of crept up on me, and I haven't really noticed.
Just a minute. You're going on holiday again?
Hang on. Look, hold on a cotton picking minute here. I'm going on another week holiday.
You do a week at a time, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. As opposed to you, who does about 6 weeks in one block.
I don't do 6 weeks.
And then another 2 weeks after that. And I don't know. You're just always on holiday. I need it as well, because I've been working hard. Anyway.
You do need it. I don't resent.
So there's that. Oh, we had a lovely harvest lunch here. We invited our church over for lunch. And here's the best thing. You know that Claire told me I had to build this bar thing, which I built.
Yes.
Well, we got a keg of beer in. Only a small one, but we got a keg of beer. And we had it on the bar. And it was just lovely. It was like A keg of beer has returned to the pub after 25 years. Serving beer again. It was very nice. So that was lovely. So nice weekend. Yeah, good.
Oh, wonderful.
So pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, good. I met up with my brothers, which might not seem like a big deal, but it actually is a big deal because, you know, they're tricky to get together. It's the first time since my other brother died. So we went to a Mexican restaurant and we talked about Brian and that was lovely. That was on London on Sunday, Undefined, still enjoying that. Did the Worthing Art Trail in the afternoon. That was nice. But here, I wanted to talk to you about a particularly bad habit I've got at the moment. And that is, and basically this is a defence of the quiet time again, which we've done many times. But I do find myself sometimes when I'm busy just viewing the day as something to get through.
Yeah.
It's a series of challenges to work through, and you know, if I get to the end of it then I'm like, you know, relieved if it's all gone well. But that's a stupid way to live, isn't it, really, when you think about it? So my quiet time has been very much about, I've realized now that the purpose of this quiet time that I try to have in the morning, whether it's on the pier or whether it is in my home or wherever it is basically about correcting my poor attitude towards the day. Because now I've seen that this is what I'm doing. Of course, I'm not present to an awful lot of it because I'm always thinking about the next hurdle that I've sort of got to overcome or the next thing to. So, yeah. Yeah, I've just been noticing that.
Well, I don't think you should feel too bad about it. I mean, most of us have sort of days and weeks occasionally when actually all we've got to do is get through it. You know, that it is a bit of a slog. I applaud your efforts to be more mindful and more present and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But I also think, knowing a little bit of what's gone on for you recently in terms of work, there probably have been days when really what you're looking forward to is that bit at the end, the cork pops or whatever it
is. I think it's just doing all these young people's feet. I say young people, I mean people in their late 50s and 60s, okay? So when I say young people, that's what I mean, not teenagers. But you know, I by the end of last week, I'd really had enough.
Yeah.
And then blow me down, the next two funerals I got in was for a 50-year-old and a 60-year-old, you know, and it's just like, okay, this is how it's rocking at the moment. So that makes me even more mindful of, you know, none of us know when our number's up. And I don't want to have lived my last day on earth going, oh, I hope I could just get through this. Not going to happen for me. Right. Anyway.
Well, what you want is our Do Nothing app that we sort of launched last week, only launched, I use it in the loosest sense of the word because it doesn't actually exist and will never exist. But
yeah. Well, thank you for that, because speaking of feedback, Matthew wrote in and said, hi, Joe, love the podcast this week as ever, blah, blah, blah. He said, Nick mentioned a model where people, an app, where people pay for an app to do nothing. He says, I suggest you have a free version where you can have nothing, but every minute an advert pops up and you have to wait 15 seconds for the nothing to return.
Absolutely brilliant. People
would then pay for longer periods of uninterrupted nothing, maybe the ability to upload to social media bragging about how much nothing they've done that week.
Yes.
Cheese for Matthew.
Yeah, that's what we want. We want Nothing Prime. So you actually have to subscribe to it in order to get rid of the ads on the nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right, that's
very good, Matthew. You can have a little bit of commission
for that. Brilliant. He did say, BS, like you, I've tried to pull away from the hate flowing in all directions. I've done some of it by stopping reading the news. I don't go on social media, so it cut off the primary source. He said, I went from looking at the news more than 10 times a day to 3 times in a fortnight. And he said, I feel better as a result. And when I mention this to people, I find I have missed very little. I've still heard about the major events by word of mouth. So that's good, isn't it?
Well, this is good. And actually, it does work because, as you know, I don't really look at the news. And the key text here, by the way, is a book I've mentioned before, a guy called Rolf De Belli, who wrote a book called Stop Reading the News. His sort of mantra in it is, news is to the mind what sugar is to the body. You know, it's kind of, it's sort of, you crave it, but it's not necessarily good for you.
Ah.
But having said that, certain sort of big events, you'll still find out about them. You'll still see them. Like the escalator incident at the UN this week for
oh, poor Trump. Yeah,
you know what, he it's obviously really annoyed him that an escalator has failed. I doubt that anyone was responsible, but what I really hope is if there was someone responsible and they find out in future years, they give that person the Nobel Peace Prize. Oh, that would really irritate him, wouldn't it?
That would really upset
sort of double down on it. That'd be brilliant.
So you didn't hear his speech to the UN?
I've seen sort of little clips of it and picked up on all the sort of Kimmel stuff. And I suppose the thing is, that's partly what we're going to do this week, because last week we talked about anger and we realised after doing it that some bits of it you hadn't really dealt with properly.
No, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And you, in a what I can only term a remarkable turn of events, have actually gone and found somebody knowledgeable to talk about this issue with. So it's not just us floundering around again. So that's good.
I found a therapist who knows what they're talking about. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So we're going to carry on with that this week, I think. Yeah.
And listen, just for the benefit of our American listeners, and I don't mean to suggest that your president in any way gets facts wrong, but strictly speaking, just so you know, we're not under Sharia law.
No. Not as far as I know.
London is a lovely place. Been there, around there all my life. Always felt safe. You?
Yeah. Never felt remotely threatened. Maybe I'm just oblivious. Maybe I'm just not alert. I don't know, really. Anyway.
Moving on. Andrew says, hi there, Joe and Nick. He says, I thought I would email in response to your latest episode and reference to an app that does nothing. Now, this is a more serious point this time.
Oh, okay.
He said, he said it reminded me of videos I made for my friend, as they said they had trouble sitting doing nothing. As I found this easier, I recorded 5-minute videos and uploaded them and sent her the link. The videos were simple and a little quiet, as they were of me sitting on a bench, just sitting doing nothing. My friend said that they liked the video and I hope it was helpful. It was interesting to me that they struggled to sit and be still, and that having this video was a prompt to sit still. I don't think the videos will ever go viral, he says, but mainly because of the privacy settings. But it does highlight the need to be still and the struggle this can be. Thanks for all your thoughts and wonderings. It's good to be with you on the journey. And that's from Andrew. It is interesting, isn't it? Mm. There is a power in being silent together with someone else.
Yeah. And the visual of it is interesting. I think, I don't know if this is an apocryphal story, but somebody told me the other day, in either Sweden or Norway, a Scandinavian country, they almost as a sort of joke, they put a fire burning on TV, you know, a fireplace burning on, and just left it on for hours on one of the channels. And they found that loads and loads of people just were watching it. They just wanted to watch something peaceful and nice. That's and, amazing. You know. And so you still get those, don't you, on YouTube, those kind of videos which are, you know, just quiet. I can't remember what they're called. But anyway, the visual trigger obviously helped there. Yeah.
And I remember when I was in a church, a proper church, we did breakfast church once in silence. So you think the whole purpose of breakfast is go and have breakfast, catch up with people. And you did it in silence, but it was amazingly powerful. Really powerful to sit with people in silence. So I kind of get it, Andrew. Hadn't thought about making videos, but that seems like a good idea. Anyway, Sam wrote in and said, dear Joe, thanks for another great podcast, blah, blah, blah. I don't have any good ideas for dealing peacefully with my anger. He says, I've taken Nick's approach of disengaging from all social media and news feeds and only getting updates at times of my choosing. He says, I'm much less well-informed, but also less angry. He said, your idea of calling those we might disagree with, our brothers or sisters, is something I will definitely try and do. One of the reasons for me disengaging from social media was because I do want to think well of people, but social media kept reminding me that I share planet with a significant number of idiots, or perhaps I should say my brothers and sisters with suboptimal critical reasoning skills. Anyway, he says, on another matter, back in the 80s, I was in church and there was a persistent high-pitched beeping that was a bit annoying for some more than others. No one could identify the source, so people prayed against the beep. Then they cast out the spirit of the beep. Deliverance did not happen, and it turned out to be a pager informing its carrier, and he says in brackets, a first-time visitor, that a donor had been identified for the transplant they were waiting for, and that's why it had never gone off before, so they didn't recognise it. Needless to say, they never came back. Grace and peace from Sam.
Well, isn't it good God didn't answer prayer there, isn't it?
It
they
really
needed the
is.
Transplant and they're getting the alert.
Yeah. I love amazing. Praying against the spirit of the beep. Not the beep, the spirit of the beep.
Yes, whatever lay behind the beep. I'm talking about, you know, he talks about the planet with a significant number of idiots. One of my wife's favourite books is a book about personality, different personality types, and it's called Surrounded by Idiots is the book title. Yeah. And it's one of the best ever book titles, because who doesn't think that basically they're surrounded by idiots? We all think that. I mean, I do a podcast with one, and, you know, it's just... Anyway, thank you very much.
That's funny, because I do a podcast with an absolute... So it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, but that wouldn't be such a good title for a book, Surrounded by Absolute...
I don't know. I think it would sell.
It probably would, actually, now I come to think about it. Anyway.
Anyway, let's return to the wonderful Mim. He says, good morning, Joe. Nick, he says, I've just got back from my spiritual running, where I listen to your guys' pod and reflect on it. One of my favourite spiritual practices. So someone wise that I heard or read, no idea who, sorry, said that anger is a really helpful emotion for showing us injustice. When we take note of our anger and listen to what it's telling us, not just react, it will show us what has made us angry, almost always an injustice of some sort. And then it allows us to think of what we can do to help change the injustice. So for you who are very self-aware, this might seem obvious, but for those of us who act rashly and maybe violently, they maybe haven't taken this reflective step back. For example, are people really angry that the country allows refugees to land and have shelter? Or are they angry that in a capitalist society, they are unable to get jobs and partake in improving their own lives in the ways they may want to? And she's, as I'm absolutely not trying to debate politics, but simply to say, let's remember to look at what our anger is showing us. Then we know where our actions can be directed. So that's great. Thank you, Mim. Very true. And very wise.
Not only very true, but a really good intro to the interview that you've done. With our friend of the show, Becky.
Yeah.
It's really, this really comes about because we felt we left some things unsaid about anger last week. And not only that, the anger hasn't really gone away this week. It's not like it's not still a hot topic, really.
No, we said we wanted to learn about what are healthy ways to process anger.
Yeah.
And I thought, who better than to talk to Becky? Becky's been on the show before. Some of you may remember, a therapist. Last time we were talking about sex and relationships, but this time we're going to talk about anger. So here's Becky. Hey, friends. Well, listen, I am delighted to welcome back to the Midfaith Crisis podcast everyone's favourite relational and psychosexual therapist is Becky Francis. Welcome back, Becky.
Thanks, Joe. And that would be lovely if I was everybody's favourite.
No, you definitely are. So last time we talked about sex together, and that was really helpful. But this time specifically, I want to talk to you about anger. And that is because last week, I think Nick and I accidentally avoided it. We were going to talk about how do you manage anger and what are healthy ways of processing. And maybe we did it subconsciously because we don't know, or maybe we forgot because we're just old. But whatever the reasons, I thought it would be fantastic to talk to you about this as someone who has helped people work through anger. I think lots of us grew up in a sort of tradition that said anger is bad, or we grew up in families where certainly as children you were not allowed to express anger. So I wondered if you could help us with that a bit. Is anger wrong?
No, and I mean, I think just to I can probably relate because I'm part of the old club as well, so I forget what I've said and what I haven't said, but I think we all probably can relate to anger, can't we? I think it's a very natural emotion. I think that I certainly get angry. Ian, I know, gets angry. My husband gets angry at queues. He can't queue for anything. But actually, that makes me more angry that he can't queue than it makes him. But so generally, and there have been certainly times in our relationship where I've stropped off and banged doors and things. But I think so I want to normalize it. Obviously there are impacts of anger that aren't okay. And if it regularly occurs, then perhaps we need to check out why that is happening. And that often there are reasons behind it. So, for example, it could be somebody's dealing with a level of shame about something. Maybe somebody's fearful about an event or a stage in life. I can certainly relate to that. I think perhaps, different stages we move into, different seasons, don't we? And for some people, that's quite alarming. And that can be released in anger. And so if we're not communicating effectively about it well enough with our partners, and it's hard at the time, but I think you'll be able to relate if you know that it's you that's it's getting angry more and more. So in the calmer moments, give yourself some time and reflect on why that may be happening. And if you have opportunity to talk to a therapist, that's great, but certainly talk to your partner about what's the frustration? What are you really scared about? What's leading up to that anger? And own it and apologize where you need to.
So anger is not necessarily something to be ashamed of. It's just part of life, is what I hear
It
you
is.
saying.
It is.
I come across anger in the context of grief a lot of time, and I was
Yeah.
speculating with a friend earlier today that maybe some of the anger we see on the streets at the moment and this sort of increase in nationalism, I just wonder whether for some people it's just ungrieved grief. They're just angry. They don't even know why they're angry.
Yeah. And I think Nick made a really good point last week in
Oh,
your
don't tell him that.
just to give him the benefit there. When he said that he'd written to his MP, now, what that was about, I don't know, but I'm imagining for him there was a frustration there, something that he needed to air. But I think that it's good to be able to channel it and to understand, like I said, where it's probably coming from. I've got a good friend of mine who's a very active climate protester, and she could get really angry, but she's a member of XR, and she very calmly protests, makes her point, stands her ground. I've got a lot of respect for her, but she doesn't get angry. I never hear her getting really angry, and she doesn't preach it, so she wouldn't get annoyed with me for not being a vegan, but she's a vegan for very good reason. So I think there are ways of approaching it, aren't there, that we probably could take examples, heed from examples that might have.
Well, I mean, let's cut to the chase then, Becky, because the reason I wanted to talk to someone, I don't know that you'd probably like to be called an expert, but the reason I wanted to talk to a therapist about anger is because I'm feeling angry. I'm angry at what I'm seeing in the world. Now, I have my own issues to be angry about, and obviously it's very easy to project that out and find a reason outside to be angry. But let's just assume for a moment that it's just not all about my messed up life, because we haven't got time for that.
Any of our messed up lives,
But
yeah.
I do feel angry at what we're seeing in Gaza. I do feel angry about the rise of fascism. These are things that frighten me and make me angry. What can you help me know? What are healthy ways to process that kind of anger?
I think you're again on the podcast last week. I think one of your listeners, Gus, had some really good points. In those quiet moments, taking it away and reflecting and thinking about what you can do actively, because it is about action, it's about contemplation and action, isn't it? And some of us are more action focused than others, but some of us are really good prayers, or but both and, and so think about where you can channel it, where you can channel that frustration. And I think if we're in a calmer moment, we can probably reflect that the anger just really alienates people. So if we're really shouting and aggressive, it's people aren't going to listen. You know, it's like the age-old example we have of the guy with the sandwich board shouting, you know, and the end is nigh in the high street, and all it does is push people away, doesn't it? But actually, that act of kindness that somebody might give you, not even mention God probably, but still is very kind, that goes a long way, and we remember that for a long time.
Okay, so in terms of, you know, this sort of anger at injustice around the world, I should pause. I should take time out, is what you're saying, to reflect. I mean, do you have any thoughts about, you know, how you turn that to prayer and what that might look like? Have you know, experience of that or?
I think it's tricky. I think for me, meditation really helps. So actually, I go to a meditation group when I can, and taking that time to just be completely silent, it takes practice. But certainly that helps for me. And mindfulness, again, on a walk, rather than just letting my mind kind of think about lots of things, actually just focusing. You could probably relate to this, Joe, from what you do.
100%.
Actually looking at what's around me and being grateful for what is there, and where we do live and what we have around us. And often what will come out of that, rather than sort of direct prayers for me these days, there'll be a pra that practice helps me to stay rooted and calmer. And I then, funnily enough, words come to me or images come to me that I can only assume are from God of some kind, you know, however that looks. But often it's not about something, it's not vengeful.
Yeah, no, thank you.
It's reflective. It's a nudge to do something, and it doesn't have to be anything that spectacular, does it? Seemingly spectacular, it could be. I try, for example, and just say hello to everybody that I see walking. You know, and it's
That's
amazing
interesting.
how many people actually look up, and it's just seem to find that, you know, warming, really, because so many of us have just sort of tunnel vision, head down, aren't we? Yeah, but it could be something more active, whatever it is that we are passionate about. Homelessness, for example. What do we do rather than getting angry about that? What do we do to help in our area about that?
And it does seem to me that, you know, I know when I get angry, it goes with a range of other emotions. You know, anger's perhaps the last bit. I said, you know, I feel fearful and angry. So is there a relationship between anger and, you know, what you're advocating is pausing? Is that ability to say what else is showing up in my body when you do that? You know, like are you angry because you're actually really scared about
Yeah,
something or
exactly. And there's a really good tool actually out there by somebody called Gottman, and it's called the Four Horsemen. And many of your listeners may well have heard of it, but it really clearly explains the different styles of anger, really, because we can think that that's about being angry and shouting, but actually there are lots of other very controlling behaviors that we may be responsible for, like criticizing people. You know, Ian and I are always challenging ourselves because we tend to go a bit moody and critical. So what else is going? What else can we do instead of that? Contempt, so attacking somebody's sense of self. You know, and I think you touched on that in the last episode, Joe, about accepting that people have differing views. They don't have to agree with you or have the same views of you for you to see that they're still people of God. They're still worth listening to and showing respect. Defensiveness, that's another way of, you know, feeling very, you know, like somebody's always attacking you. And nobody's going to listen to you if you're constantly on the defense, because it sounds like you're being quite aggressive. And then stonewalling, that's another classic that can happen in relationships where we're fearful of how a conversation's going to go, or it's something that is just too difficult for us. So actually what we do is we withdraw, and we don't speak, maybe for days, some people. And actually that's really for somebody on the receiving end of that, that's really distressing. They may actually prefer to have a big old argument than have that experience for so long.
Yeah.
Wake up every day wondering if their partner's actually going to speak to them.
Yeah.
So what's going on behind that? And we can't change anyone, but we can change ourselves. So we can change how we respond to people. We can change if we think we do that and we withdraw. Why is that? Why are we doing that? What are we scared of? Or what is it that's going to be so tricky about that conversation?
Well, listen, I'll tell the listeners now. You laughed when I sent you through about 20 odd questions, and I said I just want 10 minutes with you because we needed 2 days. But sorry about that. But let's ask the ones that I put towards the end of that list. How do you think we can know when we've processed our anger enough to move forward? How do we know when it's done?
That's a really good question.
Hmm.
I think for me, from my experience, for me, I think anger can come up far too readily. So I might process and are able to manage one aspect, and then unfortunately something else will come up that I'm frustrated about. So for me, it's a rolling program,
Okay.
which might feel quite draining, but I've got to be honest about that, you know. But I think you will know when there's something that you've tackled because you're channeling it in a more productive way, like we're helping in some way with a charity, or we're actively saying, right, okay, I'm going to communicate with God about that, whether that's literally praying those prayers or it's going for a walk in nature, whatever that looks like. We're still active in changing that approach, that something that's more productive,
Yeah.
but not beating ourselves up if we then get angry about something else. You know, maybe that's the way that we are. And it's a work in progress.
Brilliant. Becky, thank you for this. This is so helpful, and it's so good to talk to you with your years of experience of helping people with this kind of thing. Finally, just, if there's listeners out there who are feeling frustrated and angry, maybe they're angry with their churches because they're, at the start of the whole mid-faith crisis deconstruction. Maybe they're angry at the world. Maybe they're angry. Is there any ray of hope you can give? What can you say to them? And it doesn't matter if you repeat something you've just said. What can you say to them to help today deal with that anger?
I mean, I always come back to communication. So if you're on your own, then speak to a friend, or it's difficult to speak to your partner, speak to a friend, speak to your pastor at church, or maybe write into the podcast, Joe.
Oh,
You always send really good replies to anything
thank you.
that I've sent in. So, you know, I'm sure you, and I know you try to reply. Yeah, just, and then being perhaps channeling it in something, like I said, something more
Yeah.
productive, reaching out to a charity that you feel passionate about. And don't expect everybody else to feel passionate about what you feel passionate about.
Yeah.
So you can start getting angry with somebody about something. They might not feel the same anger about that because there's something else that they feel passionate about. And that might be frustrating in itself. So make sure you channel it in the right direction.
Brilliant. Becky, so grateful to you. Thanks for being the unofficial therapist to the podcast. We greatly appreciate it. If people do want to get in contact with you, either to talk about anger or relationships in particular, which is I know is your speciality, how can they find you?
Becky Francis Therapy. I'm online.
Great.
Website.
Becky, bless you. Thank you so much. Thanks for being there.
There we go. That was Joe interviewing Becky, and loads to, I think, to chew on in that interview. Thanks ever so much for sparing the time speaking to us, Becky. That's really
Yeah,
appreciated.
thank you. Brilliant.
And for validating me, actually, I think that was particularly
That was the low
always
point of the
welcome.
interview for me. I've got to be honest.
Always welcome. I think what I took out, there were lots I took out of that, but I think one of the things is also what Mim was writing about, and
Yes.
that's reflective practice,
Yeah.
you know, and the importance of actually reflecting on our feelings, whether they're anger or grief or I suppose even joy, you know, what causes them, what lies behind those feelings.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it brought to mind that scripture about being slow to anger. And I suppose if you're feeling angry and you can somehow train yourself to go, hang on, wait, before this turns into full-on rage,
yes,
I need to stop and reflect on what's really bothering me here. What's going? Because it might not be just the thing that has set it off. There could be a whole load of other stuff lying behind it, as Mim said.
And I do think in sort of Christian walk, sometimes we're not actually very good at reflection. We're good at confession, you know, and we're good, you know, absolving people of our sins. We're not actually good at examining those sins to sort of reflect on what goes behind them. We would rather they got hurried out of view, you know, because there's a whole shame thing around them. It reminded me of the bit in James, I think it is, where he talks about people who are not, who are just sayers of the words and not doers of the words. And they're like people who look at their reflection in a mirror and then go away and forget what they look like. You know,
that's good.
It really felt like that. Incidentally, on that, I was on a call the other day and I suddenly realised it's ironic, this, if we're not reflecting, because this generation, or our post-COVID, we must have spent more time looking at pictures of ourselves than any other generation. Every call you make, Zoom calls, Teams calls, whatever, this call I'm on at the moment, there I am, a little box up there.
Yes, you are.
You know, when you're on a Teams call and there's lots of you, you're always sort of noticing yourself, aren't you? You're always sort of looking at yourself. And we take selfies endlessly. And yet we don't actually step back and really reflect very often on what
motivates
us. That's
a really interesting point. Do we truly see ourselves? Yeah.
So I really appreciate that injunction to do that, encouragement to do that. The other thing that really hit for me was Becky talking about defensiveness as a kind of anger. And defensiveness is my big issue. You know, one of my big issues, one of my many big issues. One of my many huge issues. Anyway, defensiveness. You know, I can so easily get really defensive about my work or about, you know, in conversations or arguments or whatever. And I'd never before linked it with anger. And that's, I think I need to really think about that, because I think it does come certainly from a place of not feeling empowered or not feeling able to do something.
I think that's right. And I think looking back on last year in particular for me, and you remember we talked before about how it was quite an anxious year for me. But I think looking back now, I can see how grief, the two primary things resulting from my grief was anxiety and anger. Yeah. I was much quicker to get angry, and I was much quicker to be anxious as well. So I think anger and fear may go a little bit hand in hand, as I was saying.
They do. I'm sure there's this whole mix of things. It's grief. I think feelings of grief are very like fear, aren't they? And I think there's an element in there of you're faced with something in grief that you can't do anything about. So it's you're helpless in the end. You can't solve that problem. And I think helplessness is also feeds in. It reminds me of, I was walking along the other day in town, and I was nearly driven off the pavement by a lady in a mobility scooter.
Oh yeah, we get a lot of those in Worthing.
Of course you do. It's literally the most aggressive driving I've ever seen in my life. And I thought, gosh, what is behind that? And I wonder, because I think you see it quite a lot, you know, this kind of entitled, aggressive sort of driving on the pavement. I wonder if it's the only area of their life where they feel they have some agency and power, you know, where other people take notice of them, you know, and so they're going to mow people down. Grief or loss may also be why, as we get older, we get a bit crabby as well. Maybe we feel we're being left behind. We're not and listened to. We have no power anymore.
Yes, exactly. And that's why I think letting go is so important. In fact, today was a big, big day for us, because Rachel's dad, after 6 weeks in hospital since his stroke, has come home. And you sort you know, you think more and more about this aging process. He's 87, and it's tough, isn't it? It is about letting go, and ultimately, of course, about letting go of our life.
Yeah,
but letting go of things that you once took for granted. He can sort of speak again, but, you know, struggling with reading and things, that's going to be so difficult. He was such a prolific reader.
Yes.
You know, he'd read you know, more than one book a week, two books a week easily, and sometimes more. And to suddenly to have to let go of that and to find some sort of peace in letting go of that must be extraordinarily difficult, I think.
Part of the answer, I think, lies with us who aren't necessarily in that position, how we view people like this. I've talked before about the W.H. Vanston book, The Statue of Waiting.
Oh, yes.
Which looks at, which again and again looks at what it means to be patient and how we have used all these negative terms about people in this situation. So, you know, one of the ultimate saying being invalid, I mean, literally invalid, without kind of validity as a being.
Yeah.
So once that's taken away, there's a sense that of loss for, you know, any agency that you had. And it must be very easy to slip into despair or anger at that point. But it's up to us, I think, therefore, to give that back and to view people in a totally different way, not to pigeonhole them in this way, I guess.
Yeah, and I think not to see old people, you know. I really mean that. My mum was 96 and it hurt me that, you know, people only knew her in her 90s as she was coming to the end of her life, because really she was the same person. Are we all about 25, 27 inside, aren't we really? I always think, you know, the skin gets a bit more crinkly on the outside, but the spirit is still young. And my mum had a very young spirit, it has to be said. And so I try not to see old people. I just try and see people.
Yeah, and the language we use around that, I think I've said this before, you know, there's a sort of tipping point, isn't there, where when you're younger you fall over, and when you're older you'd had a fall. It's sort of, something's happened to you, it's been done to you, the fall has been done to you. You didn't have enough power to fall over yourself, suddenly you were just standing there and a fall came along and hit you. So keeping the active language in there, I think, is important as well. Look, there's lots we could talk about out of Becky's interview. Thanks again so much for doing it, Becky.
Yeah, thank you.
And I'm going to take away that need for reflection. Not I do quite a lot of reflection, but that like you were saying, a bit about your day, you know, perhaps you could do a sort of preemptive kind of reflective practice. That doesn't sound sort of contradiction in terms, but sort of at least preparing yourself to do it, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. And also, you know, I think with the world events, and we won't talk about them all again, but you know, with stuff that's going on, just a reminder that, you know, what Jesus, I guess, models for us that try to follow him is this sense of, you know, love wins, that love is the weapon of choice in amidst all of this.
That's great. And that too sets us up quite nicely because, as I said, I'm away next week, but we've got an interview largely on the subject of love, or at least it talks a lot about it. With Thomas J. Ord, crazy name, crazy guy, is the theologian, and you've done, I think, a really fascinating interview with him.
He is a lovely, lovely man, and it was an absolute joy to talk with him. Yeah.
So thank you very much for listening. Thank you for supporting the podcast. That's lovely. Thanks to everyone who recommends it to others. That's really nice as well. And we'll be back with you next week with an interview.
Can I finish like a Baptist minister and read some scripture? How about that?
I don't know what's happened to you. I really don't. I thought I knew you, and now you do this.
Well, do you know what? Came across it again and just thought, I need reminding of this every day. So
let's do it.
Here's a passage. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind.